If you want this podcast free of ads, follow us now on patreon.com/ David McWilliam.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com. Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
To understand the economy, you have to understand human nature.
This podcast is powered by Acast.
Podcast time. How are you doing there? It's that podcast. I was just listening to John there wheezing across the way. Give up those Al Harris, will you?
I will, yeah.
No, do.
I will, yeah.
Do.
I will, yeah.
Sorry, I'm just worried about John's physical health on the basis.
Listen, Mac, I'm a boxer. So I'd watch what you say.
You are a boxer. How's the boxing going?
Great. I have to say I love it. Beating the shite out of bags, but I would never get into a ring with
that
somebody.
That wouldn't hit your back. Exactly. Do you want your go and all that stuff? Anyway, it's podcast time where, you know, I'm looking at this extraordinary sculpted, chiseled creature across here. It's been down boxing. Funny enough week, John, do you know, I've been teaching economics all week in Trinity and it has been brilliant to go back to teaching, lecturing, reading all the sources. It's brilliant.
It's your natural environment, Mac.
I think it probably is. And the class, you know what was very interesting? So it's an MBA class. So they're early 20s, I'd say 20 to 30.
Yeah.
Mainly foreigners.
Right.
And what was really interesting is having their view of Dublin. They love it here.
Do they come specifically for the course or for your course?
Well, absolutely for Michael's. Well, the interesting thing is they said to me, and this is fascinating, that they came to Dublin because of all the international opportunities. That Dublin is under the radar screen because they've got all the tech companies here. They told me, I wasn't so aware of it. They said there's an amazing startup culture here in terms of opportunities. But I wasn't really aware of how good it was. You know, because they sort of, the media attitude as well, we've just got multinationals and nothing else, but there's an amazing startup infrastructure for them.
Yeah.
All the consultants, all the big jokes. I think what they were basically saying to me, and it's funny because we Irish obviously moan and complain about the place because it's our place. So you have to moan and complain.
Well, we're experts at moaning.
And there are things to moan about. There are things to fix. But all of them said, and they were for Italians and Spaniards and Germans and Dutch and a whole load of, lots and lots of Indians as well. What they were just saying was that as a city for them, Dublin, and as a country, Ireland, is a place of opportunity. And I was saying, what about the flats? And they said, yeah, the flats are really shitty, right? They said, you know, it's pathetic and we're paying through the nose, right?
Yeah.
But they said, but you'll fix that. You will build them eventually. Yeah, they were just saying, these are things you can fix. But what they were saying was that idea of having a little piece of the global economy in Ireland, and they were contrasting with living in Milan, living in Rome, living in Madrid, like big cities, right?
Yeah.
Living in Paris. They're saying they don't have those opportunities. And I thought that was something that probably don't see Ireland through the lens of foreigners.
No, of course not. But it's like, you know, it's like when we left back in the 80s, you know, I mean, Ireland was a dump at the state.
The place was much lighter physically and intellectually when we left.
Yes, it was. But we arrived in London and, in fairness, London was brilliant, but it was no great shakes at the same time. You know, it was going through its own.
We lived in terrible kips.
We did, but everything was great because we were at them.
Because it's what your point is, like, to emigrate, to migrate is a transformational act.
Yeah.
Because what you're saying to yourself and everybody else is, I'm going to go somewhere else. I'm going to be a different type of person. And I found it interesting chatting away to them. And listening to them yesterday in Doyle's Bar. Do you know Doyle's Bar?
Where's that?
It's on, I think it's on Westmoreland Street.
Oh.
Maybe Delir Street, Westmoreland Street around there.
Yeah.
Nice little boozer. Anyway, all is good. So how's your life?
life is, well, we're still alive and kicking, as my mother always says. Well, I'm, every time I, how are you, ma'am? How's it going? Oh, sure, I'm still alive anyway.
You got to love it. The mistress of understatement, Carmel Davis. I've known her for many, many years. What about all the energy stuff? Think about live energy. We were on the nose last week.
Yeah, well, as always, but it's amazing. And we spoke about this a couple of weeks ago with the, when I filled up the car for, I don't know, several thousand
300 quid.
Quid.
Yeah, exactly.
But prices have gone up again. Like it's now 1.98 for a litre of diesel.
So I think we are in, John, and we did it last week and we're going to do it again. So we're going to talk about two things this podcast. One is energy and one is the census, which we've just done. And we're going to do a little economic history of the census.
Oh, lovely.
But let's talk about energy. We are obviously in an energy crisis, the likes of which we probably haven't seen ever, in the sense that 73 was quite different. It was limited to oil.
Yeah.
Now this is going into every single commodity, number one. And number two, there's a contagion. Maybe it's because financial markets are much more integrated now, but there's a contagion between the price of oil, the price of diesel, the price of food, the price of commodities, the price of wood, the price of steel, every single input. And what it does is it makes you, it alerts you to the fact that despite all the propaganda from the tech sector that, you know, tech is cool and the economy is cool, what actually, when you look at the economy, if you want to imagine what the economy smells like, right?
Okay. Right, okay.
And looks like on a Friday afternoon, right?
Yeah.
The economy looks much more like a mechanic in overalls.
Yeah.
Drinking a large cup of very strong, non-milky tea.
Yeah. Tea that you can walk across.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. And it's dirty. It's a fossil fuel burning engine.
Mm.
Prior to this energy crisis, you kind of got the impression that it's all about tech and it's all about platforms and it's all about Silicon Valley and clean and it's all about those motorized electric scooters, not the real proper scooter, the electric ones, right?
Yeah, it's like, which I love, by the way.
But the economy looks more like a filthy mechanic than a clean-cut, be-bearded hipster. I'm looking at you with your beard and your man JM with his beard, right? Be-bearded hipsters, okay? It's quite funny, I'll just tell you off air. Well, I was contemplating this discussion and I just have to say to, hey, JM, what does a hipster wear these days? And it was so loaded, the poor fella. But to come back...
You didn't know what a hipster wore even back in your hipster days.
Exactly, exactly. But let's talk about energy, John, because typically Dublin port has 14 to 16 days supply of diesel.
Right.
Today we have 4 days. Right. And it's not just Dublin. This is the case for all over Western Europe.
Well, I was going to say, yeah, it must be. Yeah, right? Yeah.
And there was a day 2 weeks ago when Ireland had 1 day. So now Ireland has 4 days supply. There was a day, a couple of weeks ago, we had 1 day. And we managed, this is a little bit, we managed to get supply of diesel from Wales on an unusually titled ship called the STD Clapham. I jest you not. Both the Clap and the STD at one, right? On the STD Clapham came 3 days' supply of diesel. So don't knock the Clap,
with some
man.
Soothing cream as
yes,
well.
Exactly. Some penicillin injections as well. Anyway, on the STD Clapham, which is a bizarre name, but that's the name of the ship, came 3 days' supply. Ireland uses 870,000 litres of diesel a day. That's our consumption.
Right. And right. Sorry, let me stop you there. That's just for driving vehicles or for fueling vehicles, but it's...
Everything. Oh. It's like electrical generators. You know, all electric. Jennies.
Everything.
Yeah,
okay.
Jennies, tractors, hauliers, everything that runs on diesel. All the economy runs on diesel.
Yeah.
Because diesel is cheaper. It's much more fuel efficient. Much more pollutant, but more fuel efficient.
Yeah.
And we forget, Ireland is an island. And an island has, we are an island with no energy. None at all.
Yeah.
A little bit of wind, but we've no energy. So we've got to import all our energy. Therefore, it all comes on tankers. We've no pipelines. We've no pipelines to the rest of the world.
Yeah.
So we're really isolated. And the energy...
And we're probably at the bottom of the queue as well for...
Completely, because we're small.
Yeah.
You know, so when the shit happens, and it will happen, we'll talk about this in a minute. At the moment, all our diesel comes from two refineries, crude oil refineries, which refine the stuff into diesel, which are based in South Wales, right? And the supply now is incredibly fragile because their supply of crude is predicated on what's going on in Ukraine and Russia, right? And when you get down to having 4 days or 3 days, right? If you make a mistake, if something odd happens, you've got no diesel. None. And if you've no diesel, the economy just stops. And that's the prospect for the next couple of weeks. And if you think about it, at 800,000 litres, right? All you need is a big haulier. So basically, the prices are going up, as you say. The prices themselves, although classical economists say price reflects where the market clears. No, the price is a signal for everything. Right? People react to the price. It's not an objective idea. Price.
They get jittery,
they get nervous, and they think, okay, well, if prices keep going up, we're going to bulk buy now. Imagine four or five big haulage companies, right, which are shipping stuff all around the country. Tomorrow, say, look, I think diesel's going to go up to 220 a litre from where it is now.
Yeah.
Now, imagine diesel started 12 months ago.
Yeah.
At about 110 a litre. It's now 180, 190.
198 in the.
So it's gone up by, you know, 60, 70%. So if you're a big haulier and you say, do you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to order 10,000 litres today. That means that a forecourt, a garage will be out of stock.
Cleared out, yeah.
Because of social media. I mean, you've seen the thing in Dublin Airport, right?
Yeah, it's crazy stuff.
Because of
massive queues. Yeah.
But we know there's massive queues. 20 years ago, 5 years ago before social media, we wouldn't know unless the RTE told us.
Yeah.
The propaganda, the RTE, right? But now it's social media. So, for example, if I pull up tomorrow and fill up the Vespa for my 14 euros, imagine there's no diesel. Well, it takes petrol, right? Imagine there's no petrol. I'd probably tweet out, I'm at this thing, blah, blah, blah. Suddenly you have, and then somebody else tweets, then you have a panic.
Yeah.
And what happens is those...
It's like a run on the bank, isn't it?
It's exactly like a run on the bank.
The same mentality, same psychology
behind
it.
It's the same psychology. So the government back in 2008 kept saying, oh, don't worry, the banks are full of money. Don't worry, even though the money was disappearing all the time. They're full of money until the very last. And exactly the same thing's happening now.
But who's responsible for kind of keeping the nation's levels of fuel.
Oh, well done. Have you heard of Nora? Not Nora Barnacle, that we're going to talk about. Nora, the National Oil Reserve Agency.
Right.
You might not have heard of her.
Heard of her.
In the next couple of weeks, you think NEFID? Screw NEFID, right? Enough of your old NEFIDs.
Oh, no.
And screw NAMA. Nora is what we're going to be talking
about. So who's the Tony Houlihan of Nora?
I don't know. He works in Trinity, apparently, like Tony Houlihan. Kind of new gig. I'm an adjunct professor at Trinity. Can I get paid by the state and be on secondment for 10 years? Anyway, come back. That if, for example, there's a run on petrol, which is exactly like a run on the bank. Now, the interesting thing about the run on the bank is that a bank run is stopped if the source of the run is stopped. So if you go to a bank and you say, I want to put my ATM card in and there's no money, that creates a run. The minute there is money, there's no run, right? So the key thing now is to make sure that there's no run on the petrol stations in the next couple of weeks because, number one,
How do we do that? How do we...
We get enough supply of diesel and petrol into the garages. And the reason that's important is if you go to the garage and you're worried about not having enough petrol and you go to the garage and there's enough, then the panic abates. So the key thing is to make sure that we get enough because we have a store because Nora is sitting. Imagine Nora sitting on a lot of gas and a lot of petrol. And I'll explain this to you in a minute. But the way the state has been operated now in Ireland, nobody's talking about this at all. I've turned on the RTE. And
but as you say, that's probably a good thing because otherwise it would create the panic.
But when the panic starts, it's going to be a typical Irish government communication strategy. We're going to wait until the shit hits the fan, and then we're going to say it hasn't hit the fan.
Yeah,
swear to God, it hasn't. That excrement you've got in your face, no, it's not excrement. That's your right. Okay, so and I think this is going to happen in the next couple of weeks. Why? Because either one, we are going to sanction Russian oil and gas. European Union is.
Yeah.
because of these atrocities you see in every day in Ukraine. Right?
Absolutely, yeah.
Or two, Putin will say, you know what? We're going to turn off the gas. That's his play, right? That's his final, not final, but that's one of his last things.
Yeah.
Either way, then we're going to scramble for gas, right? And we're going to scramble for oil and we're going to scramble for diesel. And this is all coming down the, this is all going to happen in the next 2 weeks, right? Highly likely.
Like last week, Mac, we had a doom and gloom week. This week is shaping up to be.
No, it's not. It's not. It's not because of Nora. Because of Nora.
Oh yeah, Nora. Nora. Yeah, yeah.
The National Oil Reserve Agency is sitting on 100 days supply of power for Ireland.
Oh, it is at the moment.
It is. We have.
All right. Okay. Calm down, everyone.
Calm down. Nora, Whiddy Island. Off the coast of Bantry, a beautiful part of the country.
Whiddy Island. Do you know what? Whiddy Island looms large in my memory. I remember distinctly, 1979? Do you remember the Whiddy Island disaster?
Yeah. The Pope arrived and the Whiddy Island thing happened at the same time. I wonder if it was related. The oil combusted under a religious fervour, the heat generated from the religious fervour. Go on. Yes, it did. It did blow up.
That was a horrible disaster. I can't remember how many people died, but quite a few.
Well, they must have been workers at the...
Yeah, it was a broken pipeline or something like that.
No, it wasn't a broken pipeline. Because I'm going to tell you a story now in a minute.
Go on. Tell me.
Okay, we have... Don't frighten the horses. Speaking as a horse, right? We have 100 days supply of refined oil and diesel, the Whiddy Island.
Yeah.
It makes absolute sense.
By the way, just for everyone who doesn't know where Whiddy Island is, it's a small island off Bantry.
Yes.
In County
Cork.
And
for anybody under 40, Google it. I'm just looking at JM here. As a Canadian. Google. Hey, Google, where is it? Right?
Yeah.
Okay, it's in the very southwest of Ireland. Now, if you're listening outside Ireland, this might sound parochial, but believe me, your country's in the same position.
Yes.
So you better find out where your Whiddy Island is,
right?
And it makes complete sense to have all your oil offshore on an island because of security reasons, right?
Yeah.
Because of safety reasons. But I'm going to let you into... Small secret.
Go on.
Google it now, right? If you Google it now and you see it's about a half a mile offshore.
Yeah.
There's no pipeline.
What do you mean there's no pipeline?
There's no pipeline.
But from the Whiddy Island to the mainland.
There's no fucking pipeline.
So how did they get it from
there's no bridge. Right?
So what do they do?
We've got to wait for a tanker.
Ah, Jesus.
I swear to God.
Really?
So all of Ireland.
Ah, Jesus.
Sorry, we're laughing because this is so typical of our country, right? Which we love to death, right?
So the big tanker comes in with loads of oil and gas, and diesel, and whatever.
Whatever.
And dumps it on Whiddy Island.
Right, and then it stays there. It's all refined.
We're just a half a mile away, just waving at it.
So if, for example, say for example, Putin decides next week, I'm going to cut off the Europeans, or the Europeans decide we're going to actually act morally, right? Then every single contract for oil and gas around the world for Europeans will come under what they call force majeure. Basically, all contracts will be null and void. It's an act of God, right? It's an act
Okay? Yeah.
So all insurance companies will scramble, right? That means that the whole of Europe will be looking for tankers, right?
Yeah.
Now, to come back to the point, we have enough oil and gas for 100 days, so we don't need to have a panic at the petrol stations, except for the fact that the oil and gas is in Whiddy. It's not anywhere near the rest of the country. So we then have to charter a tanker. Now, the problem is if you charter a tanker at the same time as everyone else is chartering a tanker, there's no guarantee you're going to get a tanker.
Of course, right? Yeah.
And of course, Ireland's so small. Like, we think it's a lot of diesel, but it's not.
Look, is this a stupid question? Like, it's a half a mile, which is not very far, you know?
It is. If you've no oil.
2,500 feet. That's all it is.
It is if you've no oil to get over there.
But just get an old pipe and shove it across, no? Is that not...
I would like to talk to pipe technicians who are listening to the podcast.
But is that... It's a half a mile.
But it needs to be done now, is what I'm saying.
Well, exactly.
So, anybody with that Wavin pipe out there? Yeah. But anyway, so that is the interesting thing. So the energy crisis that is coming, right? It's obviously, unless the European Union are prepared to look at the atrocities in Ukraine and say it's not our problem, unless Germany, which is the weak link in this, is prepared to accept atrocities in Ukraine, I don't think it's going to happen. I think eventually the European Union are going to say, no gas, no oil from Russia. That's the moment where everything turns from a problem into a crisis.
Yeah.
Just imagine then Ireland runs out of oil and gas and diesel, but we have it all in Whiddy, but we can't get a tanker because everybody else has got a tanker.
We've got some rowboats, some Kirks.
we send out. There's Kirks, fellas, and barrels of oil. And we use 870,000 litres a day, which is a lot.
Yeah.
So you remember the Guinness ad? The Kirks, Ta Sheikh Charles,
yeah.
That'd be like us rowing barrels of oil over from Whiddy to Bantry to be put on milk cartons like Father Ted.
The other thing, of course, as well, is that in order to spread the diesel around, you need trucks that run on diesel.
Which you won't have. And that's why, so Dublin Port is full of these big, big tanks.
Yeah.
So we've got to get the stuff from there to here. Now, just by the way, if you're listening in another country, this is the way Ireland runs. But we love the place.
Yeah, yeah.
But the joined up thinking we're not great at. So we built a massive refinery in the 70s after the 73 war to put all our oil and gas and diesel in there. But we didn't bend the pipe. Just for the crack. I think we should take a break.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
If you're concerned about mental health or looking to get into self-improvement, join me at the Piece by Piece podcast. There, I'm interviewing everyday people and experts alike about how to overcome difficulties around mental health. Speaking of which, I just released an interview with a mental health historian and another with two friends who are healthcare workers.
If these conversations interest you, check us out at Piece by Piece. That's Piece with an A, B-I, and then Piece with an I. Thank you so much.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Now, John, now that you've got over the fact that we have no pipes or bridges from Whiddy, what about the census, John, we were doing last week, right? Ireland did, we do a census every 5 years. And remember I was saying to you.
Is it every five?
Yeah. So the Brits only do it every 10 years.
We do it every five years. We were the same.
And we do it every 5 years. And what is fascinating is the idea, I've always said, is that civilized societies, John.
Yes.
Have good statistics. And uncivilized societies have bad statistics.
Right.
So it's a sign of civilization and sophistication to have good data.
Yeah.
And I mean, in a world that's driven by data, the foundational data is the census. So I'm going to talk to you about...
Well, tell us, yeah, the crunching of all those numbers.
The crunching of all those numbers, because unless you can measure something, you can't manage it.
Yeah.
You can't, you've no sense of progress. You've no sense of propulsion forward or backward. So you need a sense of where are we now, where we'd like to go. Now, the census comes from the Latin censore, to assess.
Yes.
And the Romans were extremely good at censuses. And we should know that as...
Is that sensei?
Could be sensei. It could be sensei.
Just going back to my Latin days,
hey,
you know.
Going back to sensei. It could be sensei. The Romans, we should know because we wouldn't have the story of Jesus without the census.
Oh?
What was Mary and Joseph doing on the donkey? Looking for a bed?
Yeah.
They were going from Nazareth to Bethlehem.
Yeah.
Because Josie Joe, who got quite a fright from Mary when she said, I'm up the pole, but it's not yours, but it's God's.
Yeah.
Which, You really don't want, you don't want somebody saying that to you, right? Who did you sleep with? Don't worry, I didn't sleep with anyone. I slept with God, right? Okay. But the reason he was going from Nazareth to Bethlehem was for a census.
Right, okay.
To be counted.
Yeah.
And why was he being counted? Because Herod, remember King Herod?
I do, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
King Herod.
Nasty piece of work.
Nasty piece of work. And infanticide. He killed children.
Yes.
And the reason there was a census was Herod wanted to know how many people were in Galilee at the time,
yeah, right?
Doing the Roman instructions to raise taxes.
Mm.
But the other side of the story was he wanted to kill every firstborn male.
Right.
Because the Romans got wind that there was going to be some god was emerging as a firstborn male. So our whole foundational myths of religion are based also on the census. So what I'm saying is the census is very deep. I mean, I know when you fill it out, you think, oh, you know, what's this? But it's actually very, very deep in our consciousness. And the first census was in Babylon about 6,000 years ago.
Right.
And of course, writing comes from the census, right? So you see a co-evolution of numbers and writing at the same time. And lots of people thought, well, writing must have come first because we were writing stories. Mm. But no, writing comes, I mean, it'll sound, it's great for accountants, but it's terrible for erudite literary people. But writing actually starts with accountancy.
Right.
Because it was all about measuring stuff, right? And how do you measure stuff? You have to write it down. You have to note it.
Of course.
So therefore, you have to have a series of letters or something like letters that give you a sense of how many things you have. And that comes from the Babylonians. There's a guy called Cushim. Did I ever tell you about Cushim?
Yes, yes.
That's our friend.
He's the fellow who was wheeling and dealing with...
beer.
In beer, yeah.
He was
a
hipster. He was a hipster homebrew merchant, right? On a scooter with very tight jeans and a clipped beard. That was Cushim. First man whose name we know ever written down was a beer trader. And of course, it was written down because they were assessing things. So the census, like in history, there's huge things for British people, our English people more, there was a thing called the Doomsday Book.
Yes.
Which was William the Conqueror arrives in England in 1066, I think it is. And about 20 years after having conquered England, the Normans say, okay, well, what have we conquered? Go out there and figure out. And the Doomsday
Book. With your measuring tape. And your clipboard.
Your clipboard, exactly. And they found, you know what they found? They found 6,000 water mills in England in 1068. So quite sophisticated country. Yeah, quite a sophisticated country. And the Doomsday Book, of course, it was actually called the Domesday Book. But the reason they took to be called the Doomsday Book was because they associated with taxation, and taxation was doom.
Yes, doom and gloom.
But it was actually called Dom, D-O-M-E.
Right. Basically, what Dom being?
I have no rush.
Oh, Dom. Mac, come on.
Google it. And then, so you've got all this stuff, you know, and like, do you know that in America before the Civil War, there were two things with the census in America, right? The first census was George Washington. They have a census of the new republic in America. They come up with a figure of 3.9 million of them. George Washington didn't think that was enough.
What?
So he leant on Thomas Jefferson to massage the numbers. And the first census of America claims there was 4.1 million, but there wasn't. There was only 3.9 because they wanted to get to 4 million.
Right.
Because psychologically they thought this was going to be bigger. It's mad, isn't it? Isn't it? And then another crazy thing in the census was that in American censuses, right, in the United States, obviously, there were more slaves than there were free men in the South.
Mm.
So every slave in America, every black person in America was 3/5 of a human.
Right.
It's actually true up until the end of the Civil War.
Why 3/5?
Because what they wanted to do was, it's all to do with the Congress
and
the difference in the Senate and the Congress. And they wanted to subjugate the number of black people to pretend there weren't that many black people in certain states, right? Because they didn't count them as humans.
That's unbelievable.
And if they counted them as humans, those states would have got more representation in the Congress.
Yeah.
So it's kind of mad.
Yeah.
So black people were 3/5 of a human in the first 100 years of American history, despite the fact the American Constitution talks about liberty and equality and the rights of man.
Yeah.
It was the rights of white man, not black man.
Yeah, of course.
So it's all kind of bad. Another mad thing about the census, John, was Sweden, right?
Yeah.
Now we think of Sweden as a very, very peaceful country. But in the 17th century, Sweden was probably the most aggressive country in Europe. They're fighting wars all the time.
Yeah.
Right? That's why, for example, in Kiev, they were fighting wars against the Russians. They were fighting wars in St. Petersburg. They were fighting the 30 Years' War. They were fighting everybody. Right? Yeah. They were scrapping everybody. And they decided to have the very first official census of Sweden. And the Swedes thought, Swedish generals and Swedish aristocracy thought there was about 4 million Swedes. They did the census and they proved there was 1 million. And they said, fuck, we better stop fighting. And that's the reason Sweden is neutral. What? Sweden has been neutral since then. So Sweden was an unbelievably aggressive country. It became an unbelievably peaceful country, right?
So they had an army of whatever
a
number of
standing army, right? And they thought, oh, there must be 5 million of us. There's loads of us.
Yeah.
And then they actually took a census. There was less than 1 million of them.
Wow.
And they sued for peace with everybody. So they used the census as a defensive mechanism to sue for peace with everyone. And Sweden has never gone to war since.
Right.
It's quite amazing.
Yeah.
That so what I'm saying to you is the history of census, John, is these are my nerdy things. It's really quite fascinating. And it's all got to do with this idea that when you take good data, when you have good data, you can measure everything, you can have a clear picture of what's going on, and you can actually measure progress in some way.
Yeah.
You know, because there's no way you can measure progress with...
But as an economist, you must go back through all the census data and start extrapolating all sorts of stuff out.
Well, you know what I'd absolutely love to? You know, one of the problems in Ireland is William Petty, 1692, the first census ever of Ireland, okay?
Oh, okay.
And then there were 1.1 million people in Ireland. That went by 1804 to 5.3 million. And then in the famine to about 8.1 million, 1841.
Yeah.
So we had all this amazing data about Ireland.
Wow, that was a huge increase.
Huge increase. I mean, if we had the same trajectory as the population of Netherlands had, which would be not unreasonable to say without the famine, there'd be over 35 million of us.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
Imagine all the bridges and pipes you'd need there.
Trying to get a pint at a bar there.
35 million patties in one island. Okay.
Wow,
right. Yeah,
really?
No, it's amazing. And but the problem, one of the problems is that during the Civil War here, when the Free State Army opened up on the IRA guys in the forecourts, we lost all our records, all the census data from 1841, 1851, 1861, all gone.
We?
So we've lost all that. So we've lost all that. When you were saying, as an economist, we've lost so much of our data because of that. There was a fire and we lost all our records, which is an extraordinary loss for Irish society, because we can't do my nerdy stuff. Go back and say, this happens, that happens.
It wasn't stuck in a hard drive somewhere.
It wasn't stuck in a hard drive. No, it wasn't online. It wasn't in the cloud. But I'll leave you with the last one.
Go on.
1941, Pearl Harbor. Japanese attack the Americans. Right?
Yeah.
There are many, many Japanese people living in America.
Yeah.
The Japanese people, being very honest, put their ethnicity on the census. And the Americans used the American census
and
to lock up every single one of them.
Yeah, they interned them. That's right.
Using the census data. And also, on another more tragic, even more tragic issue, the Nazis used the Dutch. So Dutch people would be very honest, very, very factual, very, very good at data, very, very good at numbers. The Nazis used the Dutch census of Jewish people every single one of them. And I think the figure in Holland is one of the highest, certainly the highest in Western Europe, Jewish population, died because the Nazis just went to the census and said, give me the numbers. The Dutch handed them over.
I
mean, on the one hand, it's an amazing treasure trove of ideas.
Well, is Putin doing that as well, using the Ukrainian census to... Because, you know, he's saying that
he could be.
The Ukrainians are the essentially Russians.
You
know, but actually how many ethnic Russians are in
Ukraine? I think he's been less discriminatory than he's just going in and bombing the shit out of everything.
Yeah.
But there, you know, it is a fantastic thing that our foundational religious scripture is based on Herod. And if you go back to the Old Testament, the book of Numbers, John.
Right.
which was countering the Israelites coming out of Egypt, you know, Moses, the partner of the walls, all that, partner of the waves, all that sort of stuff. So it's fascinating. Like, but the history of numbers is the history of literature. And you see a co-evolution with money, numbers, literature in all civilizations. And that's why I know the census might be regarded as bizarre, but when I see it, what I see is not just ticking boxes to tell people how many people live in the house, but I see it as an extraordinary revelatory document that shines a light on a society at a certain moment in time. And therein captures so many values, so many ideas, so much information in just one tiny little thing.
So if we do a census here every 5 years, how long does it take? Because, you know, there's a lot of crunching of numbers there to actually come out with stuff that's useful.
Now you have opened that. Oh. It wouldn't be Pandora's box, because that's a box of unpleasant things.
Yeah.
Pleasant things, if there is such a vessel. So, how long, John? You know, there are people who wait for everything.
Yeah.
I wait for the census, and it'll be a couple of months. But don't you worry, I'll keep you informed. I'll put you on the WhatsApp group.
Oh, can't wait.
Like, the lads' WhatsApp group. What's Macker talking about? Bing! The census numbers are out. I just love all that stuff.
What a nerd.
See you Thursday. While I have you there, listen, I just want to say thank you so much to all our Patreons who really supported myself and John throughout the last nearly 3 years. Man.
3 years, wow.
Oh, it's a long time. I thought it only started last week. It's such good crack though, isn't it?
It is.
It's like having the dream gig, you know. Thank you very, very much. And if you do want to support us on Patreon, it's patreon.com/David McWilliams. You get ad-free, you get courses, you get chats, you can ask me questions, all sorts of stuff, and you really become part of the gang. So that's patreon.com/David McWilliams. And again, thank you very much.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.